Welcome into Hour 2 of the game. I am John Kurtz, joined by Tyler Dreiling and Mitch Fortner. We're going to have Cole Bambeck on with us here this segment to recap everything that happened on Tuesday. I chuckle because the texts I've been getting from him are very funny. He's fired up. We've got at 525 Bill Self and Lon Kruger reacting to Svi's travel. They were both asked about it on the Big 12 teleconference earlier today. We've got some K-State football for you at 542, so it's not just all hoops. For the last 2 days, we will touch on some football stuff as well.
Wondered if you wanted to lead into talking to Cole by sympathizing with Colorado. They lose another coach to Oregon as their cornerbacks coach, Charles Clark, is following Jim Leavitt to Oregon to be their defensive backs coach. And apparently you have a soft spot in your heart for Colorado.
Well, I do. I always think Boulder is really fun. I've been going there since I was a kid. Like every single year as a kid, we would go on a family vacation to Denver, and we would spend a day in Boulder. Then I went there twice on student radio trips when I was doing student radio and broadcasting the game, so I had good memories from then. I don't know. Call me crazy. I just...
One good season after, man, like a decade of being really, really bad, and Colorado loses all their coaches.
Yeah, now everything's getting poached. From football to basketball, we have Cole Bambeck with us, who was very, very downtrodden after Tuesday's loss to Kansas. What stage are you in recovery right now, Cole?
Well, I picked up a little side project studying KU's history at home, so I don't know if I would say I've completely recovered, but running some numbers on best home court advantages in the Big 12, I think you guys would be shocked to see that KU really stands out there. The last 6 years, KU has had four players foul out at home, and their opposition's had 50. So, a little bit of a gap, but it's probably just a coincidence, right? Back to your general question, I'm pretty much recovered. I mean, it's fine. It is what it is, and I didn't go into that game with much expectation for it to be that way, so kind of braced myself for that. And, you know, you don't expect to win at Allen Fieldhouse usually, so weird things just happen there.
How many notches above, like, 2012 Baylor 98 A&M were you in terms of being upset?
I wasn't quite to that level. 98 A&M, I was so nervous that I was went outside in the overtime periods and was, you know, laying in a ditch, actually. My mom would come out and tell me the score update, and then I'd run in the house and then just kept a very nervous pace-around type atmosphere. 2012 Baylor, I walked out into the woods after that game and just kind of sat there for 30 minutes in the dark in a treed area where a mountain lion could have came out and got me, probably. So I was in a pretty dark place that night. I was not there on Tuesday night. The thing about basketball, yeah, it would have been a great win, but losing a basketball game like that in the grand scheme of things doesn't mean nearly as much as it does in college football when you lose.
That is true. Cole Bambeck with us. As far as the travel is concerned, it's been funny to me to see how, I mean, it's the most, just about the most widely accepted officiating error I think I've ever seen from people on both sides in such a high-profile spot. I guess the one thing you could really say, you know, to me, my attitude on it when we first started talking about it was, as far as the travel goes, it was laughably bad. There's nothing you can really do about it, so let's just make a bunch of jokes about it, laugh, and talk about the other stuff that is more tangible, really, and matters more to the future of K-State's basketball season. But I suppose the one thing that we could have discussed and that you could say is something that could happen because of all this is reviewing plays like that, reviewing foul calls and, you know, the final minute or two of a game. And I are you a proponent of going down that road in college hoops?
Yeah, I think in the last minute of a game, when you have an egregious officiating error, which this certainly was, anything should be reviewable. Look, we can go back and review who the ball went off of in those situations. We can review the clock. You know, the Big 12, through the Big 12 source and Andy Katz at ESPN, saying it's a judgment call. Look, it's not really a judgment call when a guy takes four steps. I mean, it's the rule. You can't do that. That should be a reviewable play. K-State should have had the ball back with 2.2, 2.3 seconds left on the clock, inbounding it right in front of KU's bench on the sideline. So, you know, that's another issue, is that K-State would have had an opportunity to win the game getting the ball back if that's properly officiated there. So, yeah, I think anything like that should be able to go back to the monitor and quick review. You know, it was an obvious call. The Big 12 needs to reprimand the officials. I don't understand how these guys have gotten away with not being reprimanded. They're protected too much. That's my biggest beef. Always has been. You know, conferences that protect these officials. They make $2,000 to $3,000 a game each. They're overpaid. And to make that type of egregious error, it's dumbfounding to me. And Keith Kimble, for sure, he needs to be reprimanded. He was staring right at it. That's his call. Mike Stewart wasn't even watching the play. It's just baffling to me that that call was missed. These guys, you know, when the Big 12 source through Andy Katz said it's a tough call to make, it's not. It's an easy call to make, and if you don't make that call, you shouldn't be officiating college basketball.
Well, I totally agree with you on the sentiment of those guys should have had some kind of public reprimand. I mean, they did it for the block charge thing in the Iowa State game. At least came out and said something. I mean, they gave you something. And you know, we had Chris Lowry on yesterday saying they have not heard anything at all. The one thing I would push back on a little bit, and I wanted K-State to win the game. I was as upset as most of you, I would think, at the end of that game. I'm not sure that review in that type of situation is the greatest way to go, because don't you think then you wind up with coaches trying to, you know, take every single play in the final minute and say, hey, go to the monitor, look at this. Go to the monitor, look at this. I think that's it's a slippery slope type of argument. I think maybe you just live with the human error.
Well, you'd have to define it. I mean, I don't know if you could really, a foul is more of a judgment call, like a reach in type thing. I don't know if you could really go back and review that. It's hard to define egregious officiating error. I mean, that one was it in my mind. So I would like to see that reviewed, but you would have to define it clearly. I don't think, you know, something like that would come up very often where there was just such an obvious mistake. But as far as fouls in those situations, yeah, in the final minute of a game, there would be a ton of questions around that. So I would almost think you'd have to remove that. And if you just focus on traveling, yeah, I could see your point on that, John, that, look, it's probably not going to happen very often where you have an egregious traveling error that's not called. So it would be tough to define, and we do go to the monitors too much, especially in basketball. I tell you, one of the things that's frustrating when you watch basketball nowadays is I was watching a Butler game last night. In the final minute, they went to the monitor five different times because the clock didn't stop on the exact tenth of a second. And really, that frustrates the teams and the coaches because you're ruining the transition that the other team wants to get out and run. They don't care about a couple tenths of a second when there's 40 seconds left. You know, they want to get out and try and get an easy basket. So we do go to the monitor too much. It's frustrating that something like that is missed with the naked eye live.
Well, I would say maybe compromise to a certain extent and make it like the last 20 seconds or last 30 seconds that you go to the monitor instead of the last minute or something like that. But, Cole, I will say this. Keep fighting the good fight on looking up that KU stuff, because I am in big favor of that, as I'm sure you can certainly believe. But I am going to turn the page here for now and ask you about this. K-State's team and moving forward, how much better do you feel about this K-State team's chances of making the NCAA tournament after that game?
Well, it was a tremendous performance, Tyler. I mean, they played lights out. I mean, that was the second highest points per possession that KU has allowed in 3 years, and it was the highest field goal percentage shot by an opposition in Allen Fieldhouse since 2011 when Missouri did it in terms of Big 12 teams. Second overall behind only Kentucky last year, which shot 53% in Allen Fieldhouse. So, I mean, it was a phenomenal offensive effort, and it's encouraging to see the way K-State played. I think one of the things that you're really encouraged by, look, this team, this program the last couple of years has really struggled on the road, and they never really lost their poise in Allen Fieldhouse. And when KU went on that run and they got up by 10 at halftime, they score on the first possession of the second half, they're up 12. K-State battles all the way back, and every time you felt like KU was going to go on a run to pull out, get up by 10, K-State battled back with a couple key baskets to pull within three or four and then eventually tie it. That's hard to do, and the poise that they had in not turning the basketball over was significant. I think the biggest thing to take away from this game, guys, is I thought Dean Wade played the best game of his career at K-State, and the reason I say that is because he didn't do this with jump shots and just shooting threes and being a pick-and-pop type guy. He went down in the paint, and his footwork and patience down there was phenomenal. His head fakes, everything. He got KU defenders up in the air. He didn't rush it. Was very poised and under control when he got the ball in the paint. And that's what you wanted to see from Dean Wade. You wanted to see him post up more and show that ability. And he just looked like a completely different player the last two games with more confidence. And if he plays that way, this K-State team will be an NCAA tournament team.
Cole Manbeck talking with us, a member of the Power Cat Game Day crew. I am totally with you on Dean Wade. Like, that was awesome to see. And by the way, right now, I mean, the guy's averaging 19 points a game in conference play. That's only two games, but he's been really good against Texas and Kansas. The spot that I find myself in, and I was unbelievably impressed by how well they played in Lawrence, and I think it is a very good sign of what's to come. But you do still have the bugaboo of two really close losses against the only two really good, probably the only two tournament teams you played so far this year. You've had close losses. That was the problem last year. You know, you're going to play a ton, I would think, of close games in the Big 12 based on the strength of the league going through the rest of it. Have they gotten over that mental hump? And then the other thing is with Dean Wade, love what I've seen. He is becoming more consistent. He also did miss the game-winning shot, and I know it seemed like against Texas last year that bothered him and got in his head somewhat, and I don't want to make too much of this, but I'm saying I am still just a little bit on the fence as to whether or not I'm ready to dive right in with both of those things.
Well, I mean, I feel like I've said this about Dean Wade before, though, so I could agree with you there, because I think there were times last year where we thought he turned the corner. I think you remember the Oklahoma game in Manhattan where he struggled some, and then in that game came off the bench and was really good for K-State. He started to think, all right, he's got his confidence back, but then things went south again a bit for him. So, you know, you never know, but you hope in his sophomore year here, he's got the confidence now, realizes how good he can be. As far as this team, look, you're right, that's the big bugaboo with this team is, can they close out the close games? And look, I don't know how much I can really judge it in Allen Fieldhouse, because you look at teams all the time and there, they really struggle to win games in general, but close games, KU typically figures out a way to win it. I mean, West Virginia a couple years ago was up by 10 with 3 minutes left and lost that game in Lawrence. So it's tough to close out there, but that's the biggest issue that's occurred the last couple years is winning those close games. And you hope it doesn't become a trend and a confidence issue that, hey, we're in a close game, here we go again. They need to close the gap on some of those, because you're right, they're going to be in a lot of close games. And you look at this schedule the next 3 weeks, it's extremely challenging. You got an at Texas Tech game after OU on Saturday, and then you got Baylor, and you got West Virginia at home the next Saturday after that. I mean, it doesn't get easier. So they're going to have to find a way to win some of those games that are close and close those out.
Cole, every team in the league has now played two games, and all of these games just about have been really, really close. I'm just curious to get your take on where things stand in the Big 12 right now after that top three.
Well, it's probably the most competitive the league has been in a long time in terms of top to bottom. Your weak teams are probably actually Oklahoma. They're probably one of the weakest, actually. And now you got TCU and Tech. Tech coming off a strong year last year. They look even better this year. They're improved, and TCU obviously is significantly improved. So from top to bottom, this league is strong. I think K-State has a great shot, really, to get in that fourth spot in the final standings when the season ends, because you look at it, I think West Virginia, Baylor, and KU are all legit. But then there's really no one else that's standing out in terms of outside of K-State. I mean, K-State's been right there. But Oklahoma State had a tough loss at Texas last night. Texas was without one of its better players, and Kendall Yancey, and Oklahoma State still lost. Iowa State, you know, they were down to Texas Tech by 12 in the second half in Ames on Saturday or on Friday night. They managed to come back, and then obviously they hung with Baylor last night. But I don't think Iowa State's as good as they've been in the past. So, you know, there's a lot of winnable games, but you got to win at home. You got to protect your home court. And then obviously this team has to go on the road and steal two or three victories away from home. And I think they certainly have the capability of that. And look, I honestly think that K-State's going to beat Baylor next Saturday in Manhattan. Baylor's going to come in as the number one ranked team in the country probably. And I wouldn't be shocked at all if K-State beat the Bears.
Well, you heard it here first. There's a Cole Manbeck prediction.
Yep. Bold statement right there, guys.
Hey, I like it. Before I let you go, I know that the Kansas game didn't quite turn out as a win, but it was a pretty good performance. You've also had the Texas A&M game with Brody. Is he still qualifying as a good luck charm at this point?
I would say he's a very good luck. I don't know why my wife brought him down to me in the second half of that game, but I held him the entire second half. I think I told you that. And he was crying until we have this big blue exercise ball down there and in the basement. So I bounced on it the entire second half while holding him. And the good news is it kept me away from Twitter most of the time. The phone in my hand to do all of that. But I wouldn't put him down, because I thought he was really good luck. And then right after the game ended, my Vanessa, she came down and grabbed him from me and took him away. She was probably worried. I hope I didn't squeeze him too hard. I don't really know. I kind of blacked out there for a couple minutes while watching, but I think he's okay. And yes, I do think he's good luck. I mean, you know, between the Texas Bowl, ending the bowl streak there of a couple losses in a row, and then going into Allen Fieldhouse and having a chance to win, I think he might be the good luck charm.
We may have to start, you know, you can have your weekly sports appearance. We might have to start doing like a weekly parenting segment with you as well.
Yeah, I probably have some good stories for you guys that I could share. I know I have a couple that I haven't even told you about, but anyways.
Probably some funny and some that would scare me away from ever having children, I would have to think, on both sides of the aisle there. But, Cole, appreciate the time as always. Really enjoyed it, and look forward to talking to you again soon, man.
All right. Thanks, guys.
There's Cole Manbeck with us here on The Game, a young father.
That was great. I hope I didn't squeeze him too hard. I might have blacked out for a couple minutes there.
A little bit of K-State football at 5:40, but coming up next, this won't totally erase the pain of that loss on Tuesday, but might help a little bit. Stay tuned. It's The Game.